Hi, I'm Simon Robinson.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 182 for the weekend, starting 7 July 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, Acacia suspends its CEO.
Also this week, Samsung delivers its biggest quarterly profit on record, likely beating Apple. And Simon will talk about MediaTek 2017.
Plus, .Africa domains go to the general availability, but they're still not cheap. And Vumatel to offer 200 megabits per second to home fiber.
I can't wait to get it. It's time to do what we do best, and that's talk tech. Let's get this podcast on the road. Welcome to the show, and welcome, Simon. Thanks for joining us on Talk Central today.
Great, Duncan. Good to be here.
Regular listeners will know that that is not Rechard speaking. but Simon is joining us today to talk about a tech trade show that's coming up. It's being hosted at the Dome, right, in Randburg.
That's correct, yeah. We've been doing it there for some time.
Some time, yeah. And it's happening on the 19th to the 21st of July this month. Simon, you're the head of a publishing company called Sun Circle Publishers, which owns, I think many of our readers will know the title Screen Africa. It's a well-known technology title that, especially, you tell us a bit about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Screen Africa has been going a very long time. Focused very much on the broadcast and film production sector, looking at both technology and the creative content.
Great. And so you've got a number of titles in your publishing house, and you do the Media Tech Africa show every year. How long has it been going for now?
We started in 2001, so some years ago now, but we only do it every 2 years.
Okay.
Which is, yeah, gives a technology a chance to catch up with us sometimes.
Right. Okay. Okay. So what sort of people attend the show? Who are you trying to attract?
Got a number of different verticals, Duncan, that we focus on there. Broadcast and film production technology being one main vertical. The other in the corporate space is AV technology, and AV technology has played a massive role in integrating into IP networks. So that's a major growth area for the show and for the industry sector. And then live event technology, you know, going to anything that you're going to see at a rock concert or anything like that, that's what's going to be on show.
Okay. So I attended the last event, and it was very difficult not to take my wallet out, I must say. There was so much cool stuff there to buy. I know it's not meant as a place to buy goods, but more a showcase of technology. But there was so much stuff there, and you know, especially in the podcasting space that I'm interested in. If you're keen on that sort of AV equipment, it's a great place to go and visit. But you've got some interesting stuff coming up at this year's show. You've got a drone cage, I saw. Tell me a bit more about
it. Cage. Yeah, I mean the cage element is there to actually just safe from a safety point of view,
right.
Keep it safe inside the dome. But we've put together a drone cage, and it's for demonstrations. So we've got some guys coming out to come and show, you know, the drones and the camera technology around it that can be used on it. And then also, probably more importantly, to talk about the legislation around the use of drones from a commercial point of view. You know, it's, a lot of people have got them and they're freely available to use in a private space. But as soon as it becomes a commercial element to it, somebody wants a piece of the action.
Right. What else can we expect at this year's show?
We've put together another concept, which we are calling Black Box. Black Box is really a collaboration of we've got a lot of technology suppliers, but showcasing the creative side of MediaTek and what can be achieved with that creative. So there'll be a lot from really keep a bit of it under wraps, make everyone come and see it. But looking at it from a lighting and dance point of view and visual projection,
Yeah. So lots of cool stuff to see at this year's MediaTek. Well worth attending. So happening from the 19th to the 21st of July at the Dome. How much does it cost to get in, Simon?
Guys can register for free to go in if they do that before the 14th of July. So that's next week today.
Yeah.
They can get onto mediatek.co.za and they can register for free. Otherwise, it'll cost them $100 to get in.
Okay. So. Not too much. Great. Well, go check out the show. I went last time around, and it's quite a marvel. You might want to leave your credit card behind, but it's a great show, and looking forward to attending this one. In fact, Rechad and I are going to be recording a podcast the show this year, and I'm sure Rechad's looking forward to seeing that drone cage, because he's actually done. The reason we're not recording with Rechad today is that he's gone down to the Eastern Cape to shoot a whole bunch of footage for some cycling race, I think, with drones. So he's very keen on drones. So I'm sure that he'll be very keen on that setup. So looking forward to coming to MediaTek this year and recording a podcast there, and also having a look at the latest and greatest in AV equipment, et cetera, et cetera.
Great. Yeah, lots in mobile journalism. Hey, there's a lot has happened in that space as well. And obviously in terms of from a broadcast point of view, not so much sort of linear broadcast, but, you know, a lot of streamed content and that sort of thing, in terms of how guys are dealing with it. So there's lots of new tech there in terms of compressing it and so on and so forth.
Okay, great stuff. So if the stuff in any way interests you, broadly broadcasting media related technology stuff, then MediaTek is definitely the show to go to. But Simon, we need to get on to our regular features in this podcast, and one thing Rechad and I do every Friday afternoon when we record is to do a quiz. And we'll give the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. It's really about the latest happenings in the news space. Test our listeners a bit, perhaps. See if they've been paying attention during the week to what's happening in the tech news. But Simon, do you want to ask the first question we have this week?
Yeah, great. So first question up. MTN Group this week said it is hiring a new procurement chief. Who is he?
Our second question, ICASA has suspended its CEO, Pagamile Pongwana, on a precautionary basis, whatever that means. Who has replaced him at ICASA in an acting capacity?
Right, third up, which car maker this week said it'll stop making fuel-only cars by 2019?
Quite amazing story, that. Fourth question this week, and related to the last question, which country will ban the sale of fuel-based cars, in other words, diesel and petrol engine cars, by 2040?
Right, and the last one, question number five, which fitness wearables maker this week said it was going into liquidation?
That's our quiz. We'll get to the answers to that at the end of the show. But let's jump into our regular features now. And lots of news happening this week, Simon. Probably the biggest news this week, although it's not clear what exactly happened, was the news that the CEO of communications regulator ICASA has been suspended on what the organization is calling a precautionary basis. It's not quite clear what they mean by that. But suspended on a precautionary basis, and they haven't said why. Yeah. So it just leaves the market to speculate on what might be going on. It's interesting that this organization has reached this point. They've I think historically been under-resourced. They've historically I think the industry's criticized them a lot over some of the decisions they've made over the years. But just over the last year or so, they seem to have decided to break ranks with their political masters, if I could call them that, over the spectrum auction. You'll know that that ICASA has taken a stance directly opposite to the position taken by the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services on the allocation of spectrum.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point that, and I'm not too sure what the sort of play on it is with them breaking ranks with government and that, because, you know, they really are largely a government organization themselves as well.
Yeah, indeed.
It seems a bit like the right hand's not talking to the left.
Indeed. It's exactly what it seems like. Yeah. And of course, that whole matter is before the courts, although apparently the Minister of Telecommunications has been seeking an out-of-court settlement. They haven't been able to reach agreement on that. This all goes, of course, down to how exactly the spectrum for 4G LTE is going to be allocated in South Africa. It's an issue that's been dragging on for many years now. We still haven't we've barely started our digital migration process, never mind talking about making that digital dividend spectrum that the broadcasters are currently sitting on available.
That seems to have been dragging out for many years now, and it really needs to come to a head.
It does indeed.
Interestingly enough, within the AV industry, there's a fair number of rumblings around that spectrum as well, and its impact on a lot of the wireless technology used in the microphones, etc.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So they've been lobbying at ICASA as well.
Interesting. Okay. Which do you know which spectrum offhand?
I actually don't know the spectrum offhand. I just knew it was a bit of an uproar
because of interference. issues?
Totally for interference issues.
Oh, that's interesting.
And if I'm correct, I do recall them saying that I think a lot of the existing technology would no longer be licensed and fall into the correct spectrums, and that would be a major issue.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I hadn't come across that before. I must do a bit more research on that. Interesting. Thanks, Simon. So anyway, ICASA suspends its CEO. It's fighting with the minister. Are the two related? I don't know.
We shall see. I guess it'll play out in the media in the short term.
These things always have a tendency to do that, don't they? But ICASA, historically an underfunded organization, seems to have, become a little more assertive, I suppose is the right word to use, in the last little while, and now our CEO is suspended. Whether the two are linked, we'll find out in due course, I'm sure. So probably not too much more to say on that subject. So let's talk about Samsung, and what a remarkable turnaround story this
that's
is.
That's a huge turnaround after the debacle from last year. I mean, it's.
I mean, this is an organization that had a major, major crisis with a leading product, the Note 7, of course, the Galaxy Note 7. For the very few listeners, if any, who aren't aware, their phones are exploding, catching fire, and they had to recall the entire line at a cost of at least $6 billion. Huge impact on the company. And of course, at the same time, they've been caught up in the scandal involving alleged corruption in the Korean government, which cost the president her job.
Yeah.
She was impeached. And Samsung's
CEO,
one of their top executives, I think he's their CEO now, executive chairman, I'm not sure what title they use, J.Y. Lee, has been in court, was arrested, spent time in jail, in fact. So they've been caught up in a political scandal in Korea at the same time that they've had this this disaster with the Note 7 product. So they had to do everything they could to when it came to the Galaxy S8, which was their next flagship phone that they would be releasing. They had to pull out all the stops to make sure this was a fantastic device. It appears they've succeeded.
Yeah, it does. I mean, from the units that they're selling there, it is really quite remarkable. But one does wonder how long, and it's probably more of a question, is how long does that R&D is it sitting in line for? Because when they had that disaster, they must have known pretty quickly that, the S8 was going to come online soon and actually pull them out of it. Because, I mean, their shares tumbled at that, that lost a huge amount of share value at that that point. I haven't actually seen how much that's pulled back.
Oh, it's risen. I was looking at a share graph this morning. I stand to be corrected, but I think from October last year to now, it's doubled.
Goodness.
So they've added billions, tens of billions of dollars to their valuation. The numbers that were published this morning, I think it was for their second quarter. It's the biggest quarter in terms of profitability in their history. They have not reported a greater operating profit in their entire history than they did in the last 3 months.
It's unbelievable.
And that's on the back of strong sales of the Galaxy S8, which has been hugely well received.
Yeah.
I don't think I've yet to read a bad review of the S8.
No.
It's been very well received by the market. And while I don't think they've published any specific sales numbers for it just yet, certainly it's proved to be one of, if not the biggest smartphone seller in their history. And they had to do something special, right? Because Apple's going to be doing something special this year because it's the 10th anniversary of the iPhone.
Well, we hope so. I mean, I've almost been disappointed with what they've been doing over the last couple of releases.
Okay.
It always just seemed to be a little upgrade and little upgrade and nothing groundbreaking. But, in my opinion, nothing groundbreaking.
Are you an Apple user?
I'm an Apple user,
Okay. So you wanted to see more in the latest?
I wanted to see definitely more in the in that. But, I do think that what Samsung have done there is quite remarkable and such a turnaround. And to also not lose that market credibility, to lose that, it's a massive impact on their brand and cause them huge reputational damage.
Yes.
But, the market has been kind to them and come back and supported them.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the reputational damage was enormous. I mean, every time you got on an airplane, they would make an announcement saying, if you have a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, please send it in.
Absolutely.
Or whatever they're required
to do. Incredible,
That must be very damaging for a brand.
Yeah.
But they pulled out all the stops on the Samsung Galaxy S8. I don't know if you've used one.
I haven't.
It's a remarkable, really? It's a remarkable device. You know, the market's forgiven them.
I really find it actually quite amazing. I didn't think that they would be so forgiving. When you look at kind of, you know, BlackBerry and when they kind of went off the, you know, it just seemed to be like an absolute downhill slope. Not that they had a similar problem, but I mean, just in terms of reputational damage, etc.
Yes.
That they started to incur. And it just seemed like a slippery slope that they just didn't get off.
Yeah. But somehow they managed to do it. Maybe there's someone no doubt will write an MBA on it and a case study on how exactly Samsung managed this crisis. And of course, we're not far off now from Samsung announcing the Galaxy Note 8 or whatever the device is called, presumably the Note 8.
That's what I was saying. It astounds me is how quickly they can actually just churn out these different ones. In other words, you know, 2 years ago, probably, you know, 9 was on the table and being developed, which, I mean, I think it's true. I think it is, you know, we are probably, you know, at least 18 months to 2 years behind in terms of a lot of that R&D.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of money that these companies commit to R&D is quite staggering. Yeah. Billions and billions and billions of dollars every year. So,
I mean, we've seen it quite a lot in interesting take on it is seeing that R&D come out where we go to the international broadcast shows and you see, you know, 3D technology being at the hub of it all, kind of 2 years before the screens were readily available. Mm. So I would probably say it is a 2 year lead time at least.
Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see what that Note 8 device is. The rumors are out there already that it's going to have a 6.3 inch screen. So these are getting to big phone territory. But the fact that Samsung managed to shrink the bezel on the S8 made it feel like a much smaller phone than it was. I mean, the small version of the S8 is 5.8 inches. What's the size? What's the small iPhone? Is it 4.7, 4.8?
Yeah, I think it's around 4.7, 4.8, somewhere around there.
Now, the 5.8-inch regular S8 feels like about the same size as a small iPhone.
Sure.
So maybe slightly bigger, but not much bigger because of the fact they've managed to shrink the bezel so much. So I've got no doubt that Apple's new iPhone, which by the way is rumored to be called the iPhone X or the iPhone 10.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Okay. So the rumor is there are going to be three versions of the iPhone now coming out. So they're going to have the iPhone 8. Yeah. Which will be the follow-up to the it's the 7 plus 7 and the 7 plus at the moment. Correct. So the rumor is it's going to be the iPhone 8 which will replace the 7, the iPhone 8 plus or which will replace the 7 plus, and these will be iterative. You know, you spoke about how unhappy you were about the iterative improvements each year. I think that's what these devices are going to bring to the market. They may have a price cut as well, so they'll be quite similar to that iPhone 7, those iPhone 7 devices. 7S devices, they're called. Yes. So they'll be quite similar to those. These are the rumors anyway. Possibly a price cut, and then there'll be the new flagship, which will be very expensive.
And I think they've had to come in at that price cut when they're competing so heavily with the likes of Samsung that are offering such a huge range, you know, right from, you know, low end right to the absolute top end of the market. And, you know, Apple have traditionally just kind of taken that piece off the top.
Mm. Yeah, Apple's tried to push down a little bit into that middle market with devices like the 5C.
Correct.
But from what I can tell, they haven't been that successful with those.
Yeah, I don't think it actually has been very successful. Mm. But it definitely must be to try and, you know, capture that market share.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. I don't think Apple is ever going to be interested in that lower end market. I don't think they want to push volume over what do you call it, the price.
High end
devices, I'm sure they're quite comfortable. I don't know if it's the case anymore, but at one point Apple was capturing more than 100% of the profit of the entire smartphone industry. More than 100% of the profit.
Good.
Which meant that there were loss-making players elsewhere in the industry. So they were making more than 100% of the total profit.
Sure.
In the industry, once you factored in the loss makers.
The other interesting thing that I think has come about within cell phones and, you know, this increasing size of devices.
Yeah.
And I mean, that must literally be obliterating the tablets and the iPads of what we've got.
Oh, we've seen those numbers from Apple on the iPad. They've been in decline quarter after quarter after quarter.
We've seen it also in terms of people accessing our sites and so on and so forth. Yeah. How there's just been, you know, from an internet point of view, people accessing, you know, the website, majority of it's now coming off a phone.
Yes.
And, you know, I think we all knew that, but the tablets have been tumbling.
Yes, yes. We've seen the same thing indeed. And that the rise of mobile, the mobile web in South Africa has been absolutely amazing over the last few years. On our site, it used to be 80% desktop, 20% mobile. Now it's probably 60% mobile, 40% desktop.
Very, very similar numbers. I think we actually went up to, we just short of 70% off a mobile phone now.
Wow.
Which is, and we saw a decline from about 4% to 2% on a tablet, which is minute.
I wonder where that ratio settles eventually, because desktop won't disappear.
I don't think desktop's not going to disappear around that. I mean, I think tablet will just fall off the side of the earth. Actually,
do you use a tablet anymore?
Very, very selectively. I mean, I do, but more in a sort of personal space. Sometimes when I'm actually looking at maps and things like that, and I want something a little bit bigger.
Right.
Otherwise, not really at all.
Okay.
I mean, it's. I think what I'm getting off a phone is perfect, and with a pair of glasses, it helps.
You also don't need to upgrade that tablet like you do your phone as often.
No,
as you
absolutely.
You buy it and you leave it for years.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem for these guys, because on the smartphone side of things, they can push these upgrades every 2 years.
Yeah.
On the tablet side of things, you buy an iPad now, you probably don't need to replace it for 6, 7, 8 years, if ever.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, unless it just becomes totally out of date, and they're just not doing any software updates. But I think, you're absolutely right. And the other thing that amazes me within the smartphone world is, I mean, most of these phones are actually costing a lot more than, you know, laptops or desktops.
And,
really have got expensive. And they,
the RAND, of course, also had an impact.
It has had a huge impact. Mm. But, I mean, they've become literally like disposable devices. You know, they're 2 years old and they're done. It's kind of almost accepted that, you know, after 2 years you get another one.
Yeah. You certainly wouldn't consider doing that with your computer. You wouldn't spend 15 – I mean, a high-end iPhone 7S Plus I think costs north of 20,000 Rand.
Yeah.
The Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus is – I think around 17,500 Rand.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money every 2 years.
Yeah, and you're dropping that on a laptop or something like that. I don't think you'd be replacing it every 2 years.
Yeah, I think consumers probably do it because the operators incentivize them to do it. You know, here's another contract. We'll pay you. We'll basically give you an interest-free loan to pay this thing off.
It's an interesting model that the cell phone operators have actually got, because it's not. I mean, it's not something that is a global model, really. I mean, there are a lot of countries that don't do that. You actually got to buy your device.
Yes.
And I would think that they're not, certainly in those countries, are not getting the turnover of devices that we're seeing here or in countries that are where the operators are subsidizing it.
Of course, it's only at that high-end contract end of the market. I mean, the mass market in South Africa is buying a phone cash at PEP stores.
Sure, but they're certainly not buying a 15,000 Rand phone too often.
True. No.
So –
never.
Yeah.
Although I was very interested to see this acquisition that Blue Label Telecoms announced, I think a week and a half ago now, 3G Mobile, which is one of the big handset distributors in South Africa.
Very interesting.
And what they want to do through that is there's a financing arm to that. And what they want to do is I think they want to start to introduce cell phone financing and financing of other electronic goods like decoders and that sort of thing to a bigger market, not just the top end of the contract market as we see now. So I think they're making a big play in that regard, and possibly working through Cell C as well in doing that.
Probably a massive market for them, absolutely.
Potentially, Anyway, we went a bit off topic there. We were chatting about Samsung's profits and ended up talking about Blue Label. But we need to take an ad break, Simon. We'll be back right after this.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy,
I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Simon?
Great. Good. Thanks, Duncan.
So I had a fascinating interview this week, which we podcast on Tech Central about .Africa, the new geographic top-level domain. I got that right, GTLD, which finally has become available this year. They've gone through a process. There was first a sunrise period, which I think was launched on the 4th of April, where trademark holders could submit their valid trademarks to a trademark clearinghouse. And then they could register the trademarks before the rest of the market could, run in and register those company names.
Yeah, and try and sell them back for thousands.
Yeah, exactly. Although I was amazed when I was looking last night at some of the names available for registration, how many major trade names are not registered, like Coca-Cola.Africa.
Really?
Is available to register if you want to do it now.
At a premium.
I don't think it was even at a premium. I'd have to check. In fact, while I've got my computer open here, let's have a look. Coca-Cola.Africa. Let's see if it's been taken. But so there's been this process that we've gone through, and then there was a land rush phase, I think they called it, where it was very expensive to register. And their prices come down significantly over a period of 4 weeks. And as of this week, as of the 4th of July, it is possible for you and me, anybody, to register a domain. Some have still been, there we go, Coca-Cola.Africa, available for 2,700 on Lexinergy.
Yeah, maybe they can sell that back to Coca-Cola, but I'm not sure whether that'll fly. But
I'm not sure it's worth the risk of going out there and registering a whole bunch of trademark names, because you probably have a lot of litigation
ahead of you, probably far more costs. Yeah.
Please. Please just reimburse me my 2,700 rand. No, we're taking you to court. Yeah. I probably don't want to risk that. But there are plenty of great names available. So from the 4th of July, you can go through – there's a whole range of these. They have to be ICANN-accredited registries. So it's not the whole gamut of registries that are available in South Africa. There's maybe a dozen of them that are available. But if you go to the ZACR website, you'll find a list of the available registries. I've been using Lex Synergy to register a few of them. They're quite a good service. Slightly pricier than some of the others, but I found the service to be quite good, so I could recommend them if you're looking for a registry. I've registered a couple of these names already. Now, if you're looking for a fairly uncommon name, then you'll be able to register them now for about 2,500 rand, between 2,500 rand. So if you want to, register Simon, for example, if Simon is taken, Simon.Africa, if it's available, you'll pay about 2,500 rand for it. If you wait until the 2nd of August, that price will drop substantially again to 18 US dollars, whatever the rand equivalent of that is, maybe 250 rand or so.
You're speculating quite far in advance with the rate that the currency can fluctuate at.
That's true, dangerous. So it looks to me like the price is going to drop by, it's going to drop to 1/10 of what it is now on the 2nd of August.
Yeah, which is substantial. I mean,
however, if you want to get access to one of these domains without the risk of potentially losing it by then, because it's a name that people might want, then you should register it now before the price drop.
And is that just an initial registration fee, or is that then – and then there's obviously an annual cost in terms of that, but it's not an annual fee of 2,000. It's an initial registration.
It's an initial registration cost, and it's elevated at this level. And I think renewals are either $12 or $18.
Okay. So
so you're not going to pay that 2,500 rand every year just for accessing one of these domains early. But you do pay for the privilege of securing access before before the price drop. Yeah. I mean, there are lots of domains that I'm interested in registering. For example, I want to register my surname, McLeod.Africa.
Oh, nice.
But I'm not going to do it now because I don't think there's going to be a huge demand for people registering that name now. I'll get in there pretty soon after the price drops.
Duncan, you've just opened yourself up to a bit of exploitation.
That's true.
One of your listeners is going to do that and then drop you a mail and say.
Forgot there was a microphone in front of me. I was able to get in a bit earlier. I managed to register a couple of cool domains, which I'm quite excited about, including podcasts.africa. I can mention these because I've got them now.
Yeah.
And technology.africa, which I was surprised I was able to
secure. I'm not going to mention the couple that I spoke about a few moments ago.
No, not a good idea.
we'll leave that and I'll see if I can get hold of them.
Good stuff. You do that, Simon. So if you search a name like, I'm trying to think of an example now, a common name like, what's the one that might be in demand? Let's say continent.africa. That's probably a name that's been that will generate quite a bit of interest. Now, I've done a search on that, and it's listed as premium.
Okay.
Now, that fetches a price of around 8,500 rand. My understanding is that price stays. So even after the price drop, you're going to pay
a premium.
Whether it's 8,500 rand or it's a lower premium, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But you're going to pay a higher price to get access to those keywords which they've pre-identified prior to this process.
Property.Africa.
Exactly, that sort of thing, yeah. And I've been watching some of the names out of interest to see how they're being registered. And a lot of the more popular domain names are being snapped up. So you go back a few hours later and you see it's disappeared and it's been registered to someone. So there's a lot of activity going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of activity going on. I've noticed one particular registrant in California who has bought what looks like hundreds of different domains. So I'm guessing it's someone who's buying these up in order to flip them at a profit, and I guess there are quite a lot of guys who do that. Makes sense. Early days, get in early. People realize down the line, we'd love to do something like shop.africa. And then, who owns shop.africa? Maybe we'll pay him 200,000 rand for that domain and the guy makes a big profit.
Sure. Yeah, risky business. Eh? I don't know if I'd take that one on. Hey? Because you might, as you were saying, might land up in litigation with depending on who you're doing it with.
Yeah, I think that's why you avoid the obvious brands. Trademark names.
Yeah.
The other one I noticed that hadn't been registered is shoprite.africa.
They've made on Africa has been second to none.
I think that's a bit of an oversight by ShopRite because one would have thought that an organization of that size involved in that space should have registered that domain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. And if they don't, certainly if they don't pick it up by the second, someone is going to buy it and sit on it.
Yeah.
When it's $18, it's a no-brainer.
that sort of price it really is. Eh?
Yeah. So I think the other one that's interesting for people who live on this continent will be to get domains that will give them a nice email address.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you register robinson.africa, for example, your email address could be simon@robinson.africa.
Which
is a fantastic email address.
Yeah.
And I think people will be thinking of different ways of matching words together to be creative. Yeah.
And I would imagine it'll also help with some of the sort of search engine optimization on sites as well.
Possibly.
It's definitely when you've got the right content in your domain name, it definitely does help as well.
I mean, I'm not no expert at search engine optimization and that sort of thing, but the fact that this is a top-level domain rather than a secondary-level domain like co.za may have an impact on search engines. I'm not sure.
I think the sort of search engines have got so clued up as to where you're actually searching from as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether that's sort of affecting that from a .co.za point of view. Mm-hmm. If your market's down here, I don't think it'll affect you too much.
No, that's true. That's true.
They definitely know that you're on the African continent. But if you look at the tourism market, there's a lot around Africa and other investment sort of opportunities and that sort of thing.
Mm.
I think there's probably going to be some very clever names coming out.
Indeed. So if you want to get hold of one of those names, you better go do it soon, I think is the message here.
Note to self.
Our last item in news this week was something which actually didn't come from Vumatel, interestingly enough. It seems that Vumatel was having discussions with internet service providers about launching a new speed point for fiber to the home on its network, and then the ISPs leaked it, published it, and one of them published it on its website, and another one issued a press release. Vumatel itself actually hasn't said anything about it, but it appears that Vumatel is introducing a 200 megabit per second fiber to the home package. You'll know previously they had up to 100 megs a second, and then there was a big jump up to 1 gig a second.
Yes.
And I don't think very many people went for that 1 gig option just because it was so expensive. I think only one ISP was offering it, at least initially, and that was MWeb. I think AfriHost might be offering a 1 gig.
1 gig to home? Really?
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
MWeb, I know, is pricing a 1 gig down, 100 meg up, 500 gig of data a month for R2,500. So it's quite pricey.
Yeah, it is pricey.
I know that AfriHost on its website is offering a 1 gigabit per second uncapped, uncontended service for R50,000 a month.
Good heavens. You must have real needs around moving huge amounts of data very quickly.
Yeah, indeed. I wonder if they've got a single customer on that package. Maybe a big business. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe some. Actually, I mean, strangely enough, in the media space, some of the guys that are actually moving huge amounts of media around and that sort of thing. It's
if you're a broadcaster, that would make sense.
Absolutely. Mm. You need to get a commercial to a broadcaster very quickly.
Yeah.
You need huge amounts of
especially data. As the quality of video keeps getting better and better. I mean, we're moving from full HD to 4K.
Yeah.
4K is, I mean, you know this better than I do. Yeah. This is going to be the new standard sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And beyond that, TV manufacturers, I mean, at CES this year, they were already talking about launching 8K TV sets.
Yeah, they are talking about that. I mean, and what's quite interesting when we go over to the broadcast shows, I mean, they've been talking about that for quite some time now.
Yeah.
And it's around how do they actually manage that content on the back end and how do they actually produce that kind of content.
Yeah.
So that's, the first hurdle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll definitely be coming into shops very soon.
Yeah. I want to ask you a bit about TV, Simon, while I've got you here, but let's finish on that Vumatel subject. So 200 megs per second, it appears, looking at the ISP pricing, that there may have been some price cuts by Vumatel as well on some of their packages, because some of the ISPs have cut, I think, their 50 and 100 meg pricing. So there may be a general move down with maybe the 200 meg package coming into the old 100 meg pricing, or maybe slightly above it. I get that impression. We haven't seen anything official from Vumatel yet, but I'm hoping that's the case anyway. I'm on a 100 meg connection at home from Vumatel, and I'd love to move up to the 200 meg. Not that I need it. I just like to be
just so that you can say you've got it.
Indeed.
It is remarkable. You've seen that over the last number of years, how the packages have kind of worked on that sliding scale and chopped down. But I'm still astounded at, the home user using that kind of volume of data, because, a lot of the broadcasters and that, if you're streaming content, I mean, they've got some very clever algorithms, and they're manipulating the quality of the content that you're getting to your line, and it works very efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much above 10 megs a second, you're fine, even for 4K broadcasts. Maybe if you want to have two 4K streams, you'd need a 25 meg connection. But
I think even for 4K, I think it might battle a bit in terms of that. But I think you're actually not getting that sort of 4K. It's filtering it down. So you're not getting a true 4K.
It's compressed as well.
Yeah, correct.
I subscribe. I don't know if you subscribe to any of the streaming services.
I do.
Oh, you do. Which ones do you use, as a matter of interest?
I've actually been using. From a music point of view, I'm a big Spotify fan.
Okay,
that's my thing. And
on video.
Sorry.
And on the video side.
And on video, I've dabbled with Showmax. I'm battling a bit with the content.
Okay.
But otherwise, just using. I've gone to Netflix.
Netflix,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
They've certainly do seem to have taken the early lead in the space. I subscribe to – I'm actually on all three at the moment, but I'm constantly astonished by the quality of the picture I get from Amazon Prime, streaming at full 1080p. I don't know what it is they're doing, or perhaps there's just slightly less compression on their service than there is on Netflix. Certainly you can see the quality difference with Showmax, which only broadcasts or streams at 720p. And you can definitely see the quality difference. We've been watching American Gods on on Amazon Prime. It's based on the Neil Gaiman novel. A very good show. And the quality of the image is phenomenal. I don't have a 4K TV, only a 1080p TV, but the picture is drop dead gorgeous. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've definitely seen a compression on Netflix. Mm-hmm. You know, based on the line that I've, you know, working on, it's definitely a compression. But you know, it's not something that, you know, irritates me. So
I
kind of watch it and enjoy it. Yeah.
Okay.
So
anyway, hopefully we'll have some more specific information around this Vumatel 200 meg service quite soon. It is understood they're planning to launch it on the 1st of August. So that's just over three weeks away. So we should have a broader view of it soon.
Have they got quite a good footprint, Vumatel, in terms of?
It seems to be a race. I wouldn't say it's a two horse race because there's so many players in the home fiber market at the moment. But certainly they're two leading contenders, and that's OpenServe and Vumatel.
Okay.
I think OpenServe is a little ahead. They've been rolling out very aggressively. But Vumatel is also big, especially in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg and increasingly in Cape Town.
And they're putting their own infrastructure down? They're not going off the backbone of someone else?
No, it's all their own infrastructure. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, they started in Parkhurst, then they moved to those other parks areas in northern Joburg, and then moved up, I think it was Linden, Blegowrie, and then suddenly they seemed to explode. I think they got some more funding, and then they were in Fourways and Randburg and eastern suburbs of Johannesburg. I see now they're extending into Krugersdorp and all over the place. So if you go to their map, their coverage is actually quite extensive now. And now they're building in Cape Town, and they've just bought a small player in Durban to start work in that city as well. But OpenServe has also been making huge investments. Of course, they're part of Telkom. We saw, at their, recent annual results presentation how their CapEx spend has risen sharply on the back of bigger investment in OpenServe fiber. And I think that, I think Vumatel's actually given them a bit of a shock to the system. I think that, you know, Telkom has always enjoyed this monopoly in last mile, fixed line infrastructure in South Africa. Then suddenly out of the blue, two and a half, three years ago, along comes Vumatel. Oh, let's go and experiment in Parkhurst. I think Telkom was probably thinking, you know, okay, all right, you know, we're the big guys in this industry. These are some little startups that can go play in Parkhurst, that sort of thing. And I think Telkom, I get the impression that Telkom was a bit shocked at the speed at which Vumatel
rolled it out,
got traction and sort of, and then I think that what we're seeing now from OpenServe is a reaction to that. And I think it's good for consumers.
Absolutely, very good for consumers. But, you know, it surprised me when Neotel went to market that they actually didn't go to market purely focusing on business and putting fiber in, because I think they were ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And they actually probably would have had a big jump on people. But they've tried to focus very much on, you know, on a Wi-Fi service and on the consumer. And I think they kind of missed the boat there. I think they missed an opportunity.
Yeah, I think Neotel's had its own set of challenges. I think they're going to be a very different organization now that Liquid Telecom has bought them out.
I don't know
if you've interfaced with Liquid Telecom.
I actually haven't. I mean, obviously saw that. I mean, we use their service at the office.
Okay.
Neotel service. I've seen the transition with Liquid.
Yeah.
But I haven't followed them much.
Yeah. They're an interesting company. They're owned by Econet, which is the company started by Strive Masiyiwa, the Zimbabwean billionaire. They were the biggest wireless operator in Zimbabwe. I think they operate in a couple of other markets as well. But Liquid Telecom was, I think, really created as a effective, I stand to be corrected here, but I think they were created as effectively a backhaul provider for these wireless networks, including Econet. So they would deploy fiber between these territories, and suddenly this became a really big business. And now they've got fiber connecting all the way from East Africa down to South Africa, across all these countries. They've built data centers in Kenya. They're building a new data center here in Johannesburg. They've been hugely successful, and they've raised a huge amount of money as well. I suspect that a listing is next on the cards, possibly in the next year or two.
Yeah.
They've already made noises about a potential listing. So we could actually have two telco listings coming to market in the next few years, in Liquid Telecom and, of course, Cell C.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I wanted to come back to TVs. You specialize in the AV broadcast solutions market, et cetera. Is it worth buying a 4K TV at this stage? I know the prices have come down.
Yeah, they have. I mean, I think I suppose it's personal, you know, around yeah. that, you know, and, you know, I play in that space and I have to say that I don't actually have okay. one. So, but, you know, and I'm not, fussed by the kind of compression that I get out of streaming and so on and so forth. But yeah, I mean, it is remarkable. It just gets more and more, amazing in terms of what they can actually, produce. I think, HD, what's it, HDR, high dynamic range.
Yeah.
I think that's playing a bigger impact in terms of what, we can actually see as consumers in terms of, change, in color and so on. So you're getting far, far more greater impact from, the impact of, HDR, than, necessarily going to 8K. But I mean, that's just my kind of perception of it.
Yeah.
I think you're getting far more, changes in, strange enough in your blacks and your shadows and things like that.
Yeah.
With HDR.
Yeah. And of course, the world is starting to move to OLED.
Yeah.
I think there's still a lot of debate about whether OLED will be the dominant technology.
I think that, it's early days, for that one. I don't know whether we'll see a great change around that, but I think it's early days there.
Yeah. But I mean, OLED is promising these much thinner, lighter TVs with almost non-existent bezels.
It's unbelievable. Mm. We've actually seen some things at some of the AV shows overseas where they've launched concepts and things like that where, using OLED and that sort of thing, it's literally like a screen that's the thickness of a thick piece of cardboard.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
It's amazing.
You actually cannot even comprehend it. And you can bend it and move it and cut it into different shapes and all that sort of thing. So it's amazing what some of these guys are bringing out.
So this TV revolution we've been on since the demise of the CRT is far from over.
Very much so. Yeah. I was always surprised at, in some ways surprised at how quickly sort of 3D came and it became a real, to me, a fad. And, it wasn't long before, it was all HD and, that kind of took it out, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when those 3D TVs first came in and there was all the buzz and the TV manufacturers were trying to sell this as the next big thing and consumers were going, whoa, what's the point? And the prices came down so rapidly. And then we moved to, then 4K TV came in and that seemed to happen. That transition to the cheaper pricing almost seemed to happen overnight.
Yeah.
One moment 1080p was, a 60 inch 1080p was 20,000 Rand. The next thing a 4K 60 inch TV was 20,000 Rand. There almost seems to be an acceleration in the adoption of these new technologies and the speed at which they come to market. One wonders whether OLED is going to be the dominant in 3 years.
And I start to wonder whether that, I think it's quite plain actually that the adoption of all of this new technology is purely to drive sales, and that's what it is. They're competing so heavily with, our mobile phone devices. So much content is being streamed and consumed on phones and so on.
Yeah.
And, gone are the days of, when we had a CRT TV and you had it for 10 years.
Yeah.
TVs have almost become not too different to cell phones and becoming disposable.
Yeah.
And if you ever have to send one in for repair, you'll understand why, because you can, buy a new one for less than you can fix it very often.
Yes. Well, I must tell you a story. I had an Apple MacBook Pro, which someone spilled beer on over lunch and it fried the, Apple calls it the logic board. So I took it in to get a quote on having it repaired.
Yes.
The machine originally cost me 22,000 Rand. They quoted me over 40,000 Rand to fix it.
Yeah. Friend of mine, very similar. Wasn't a beer, a cup of coffee over an air.
Yeah.
And, the quote was for more than it was to buy a new one. I mean, it was actually just
crazy. Why even bother creating the quote? Just say, there's the new sales department. Go over there.
Absolutely.
Talk to one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I suppose it's a similar concept to motor vehicles. If you had to buy, put a motor vehicle together in spare parts, that's what they're going to hit you with.
Yeah. Indeed. Anyway, that takes care of the news and actually much more this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner, I think, was quite easy to pick this week given its results this morning, and that's Samsung. Just the way the company has managed to turn around what was a very difficult situation in 2016 and report its biggest quarterly operating profit in history.
Quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And I won't let a cat out of the bag and maybe lead on to the to the loser, but at least they didn't use that that PR firm.
Indeed. Well, I think he just didn't leave. Yeah, our loser this week, it's such an obvious one, and that's, of course, Bell Pottinger. And they issued an apology, I think it was last night now, saying sorry for their activities in the local market. They're still conducting an investigation of what they did on behalf of Oak Bay Resources. So they called it Oak Bay Capital in their statement. Someone pointed out on Twitter this morning that they did a company search and there's no such company as Oak Bay Capital. So one wonders if they even knew the name of the company they were working for.
Goodness.
But they've
consulted their attorneys to do an investigation. I mean,
anyway, there's an investigation that they're now doing, and Victoria, I think her name is pronounced George Hegan, has been fired. She was in charge of this account. And they've issued this apology. And Twitter, I was looking at my Twitter feed this morning. People are not taking them seriously. They're basically saying that they should repay all of the money they've made from the Guptas, which is believed to be £100,000 a month.
Yeah, I saw that retainer. I mean, that is just unbelievable.
It's amazing. Eh? We're talking many millions and many millions of rands here. And a lot of people saying that they should take that money and invest it in some worthwhile charity or cause here in South Africa.
I think they've caused, absolutely. And I think they've caused immense, immense damage.
Yeah.
You can't even really even put a price on it. I think it's huge amounts of damage they've caused to many individuals and to the South African brand as well. Yeah. I think it's terrible.
And they're not out of trouble. There's potential investigations coming here. They've been reported to the PR Association. I forget the name of it, in the UK, who've also promised to do an investigation into whether they've broken the rules when it comes to the way they've engaged with this client and the things they've done in the South African market. There's potential criminal liability here as well for some of the things they've done. So
really,
potentially the apology may not mean much, and there's maybe more trouble for them down the line. But I suppose you have to start somewhere. So
I wonder if they've put their own apology together, or do they use the services of another PR firm to try and actually see how do we deal with this situation? Crisis management.
Would be funny if they did that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, excuse me. So I had a pick this morning for our regular Apple product pick feature, and I can't remember what it was. So, Simon, I know you've got something really interesting, something to do with motion tracking control on stage.
Yeah, and it's I suppose it's very relevant to the world that that I work in, and unfortunately it's not something that we're going to be seeing at MediaTek, but it's a product called Black Tracks, and they have did a lot of it at ProLight and Sound in Germany. They launched a lot of new technology where they've improved it a lot, but it's all around motion tracking, and it's absolutely incredible what they can now do on stage using motion control. So putting little beacons onto an artist and being able to move lighting and to move fixtures and move video content around in various different ways in relation to that person. So it's not pre-programmed. It's moving, it's adapting itself around the motion that artist is going to make. Quite some amazing.
Is this something you can just hire and?
Well, I mean, it would be something expensive. Hugely expensive. The rental companies are the big production rental companies who buy a lot of equipment.
Yeah.
They would actually, get something like that in, and then they would obviously rent it out and try and recoup the money on it, and they make a business out of it like that. But I think for a lot of the visual artists, I think they'll start to actually put some pressure on some of the rental companies to try and bring something like that in. Some amazing shows. We might be able to post a clip of something.
Yeah, you were showing me on YouTube before we started recording some pretty amazing footage. So we'll include that YouTube video in our show notes.
Kind of put it into perspective. But
it's quite difficult to describe in voice. But
Very difficult to describe in voice. But when you see some amazing things happening on stage with stuff moving around, sometimes it's will be from something like Black Tracks.
Great stuff. And that is our show. Before we go, we need to do our quiz results. Simon, do you want to pick up that first question?
Right, so the first question. MTN Group this week said it was hiring a new procurement chief. Who is he? Answer, Dirk Carl.
ICASA has suspended its CEO, Pagamile Pongwana, on a precautionary basis. Who has replaced him in an acting capacity? And that is Chief Operations Officer Willington Ngwepe.
Right, third one was, which car maker this week is said to stop making fuel-only cars by 2019? And that is Volvo.
And related to that, which country will ban the sale of fuel-based cars, diesel and petrol engine cars, by 2040? And that's France.
And which fitness wearable maker this week said it was going into liquidation? And that is Jawbone.
Yeah, that's a sad one, actually. I've used a few of their devices over the years.
Have you? I haven't used one.
Yeah,
but I was very surprised.
Mm.
Also,
Jawbone up.
Kind of at the forefront of it in the beginning as well.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. It was, they almost came on the scene before Fitbit. And
absolutely, yeah.
They were one of the earliest fitness tracking. Yeah, I wonder what went wrong. I suppose the market is very competitive. And I think demand for those sort of devices has also kind of waned.
I actually think that you look at the likes of Garmin and so on. I think probably one of their problems is that they didn't take it to the next level, where some of these other guys have come on board and they've really have taken it to a whole new level.
You can get so much more from a sports watch than you can from one of these little fitness devices.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a problem that Fitbit is facing now as well. They're trying to develop a smartwatch, and I think they may be coming to the party too late. You've seen their share price come off massively over the last year.
Taking a hammering.
You're right. I think companies like Garmin and Suunto and all those guys.
So Garmin and Suunto have kind of been the leaders in that.
Those smartwatches are pretty amazing now.
Yeah, it's incredible. So it's amazing how Garmin went through their adoption of changing their business model.
Yes.
Because the likes of and I forget the other device now.
TomToms.
Yeah, TomToms.
Yeah.
I mean, they really fell off the wall. I mean, they just really nearly hit the wall. But they didn't make that transition that Garmin made.
Yeah. And also, I think the other challenge in that space was, I think they call them PNDs, personal navigation devices.
Yeah.
The other challenge, of course, was the rise of smartphones and Google Maps.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need one of these.
You don't. You've got far more, technology coming out of a Google Map than they can actually out of those devices.
Indeed. But they've transitioned very well into that into that smartwatch space.
Very much so.
Done very well for themselves.
Yeah.
So, as I said a bit earlier, that's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, you're welcome to mail us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Simon, thank you so much for joining us today on this podcast.
Great to be here. And back to the grindstone. Hey, we've got a big show to organize.
You do indeed. And we'll be there. Looking forward to seeing it. Those dates again,
19 to 21, yeah.
21 July. It's happening at the Dome in Randburg. What's the website if people want to go and register?
Mediatek.co.za.
Oh,
Mediatek.co.za.
Could have guessed that.
Register and you can get in for free before next Friday.
Cool. And just be warned, you're probably going to want to spend a lot of money once you've been through those halls.
Yeah.
Simon, thanks for joining us. And until our next show next Friday, thanks for listening and take care. Cheers.